Welcome to Pivotal Change. If you're looking for leadership, entrepreneurial advice, ways to grow or expand your influence, then you're in the right spot. Good evening. I'm your host, Ryan Kahn with CS Business Consulting. And on this episode of Pivotal Change, you're going to have a familiar face, my friend, Kirk Jaffe of KJE Incorporated, Kirk Jaffe Enterprises. And he is an expert, a master in helping businesses find funding, do mortgage and real estate deals, consultation, best practices. And we have a really fun episode tonight because we're going to do things that are very practical to helping you. So per usual, grab your pen and paper, get ready to take some notes and track along with what we're saying. So Kirk, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Ryan. Great to be here. I'm excited for the show today.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a good time because I've got some questions for you that I need explained on behalf of the audience, and I'm hoping you can help us out. So I want to jump in with starting a pretty global comprehensive question. If I'm a business owner, an entrepreneur, and I'm rocking along and I'm kind of growing my business and I'm doing things right, I feel like I'm moving the arrow up and to the right, but I just want to have, you know, a better way to just drive forward. I want to be able to really make a difference. I want to be perceived as either, you know, really, really good in my industry or maybe even an expert. I know I'm going to need to like adjust my attitude. I'm going to have some type of tactics or tips and tricks to use along the way. And I know I'm supposed to be setting goals and somehow tracking my progress. If I can do all of those things as a business owner, can you explain to me, is there any type of system? Is there any type of way that I just need to follow a set of procedures to really move the arrow, not just up and to the right a little, but really jack up and increase my margins and influence?
Yeah, it sounds like you're creating some momentum there is what we're looking at, right?
Yeah, definitely want to keep the momentum going and increase the momentum for sure.
Yeah. You know, we do a mastermind over here at KJE called the Momentum Maker Mastermind, and it's all based on methods, metrics, and mindset. And that's really what you're talking about. How do you integrate those three things, and what are some simple tools that are available or can be created? We do everything custom here at KJE. So the people that come to our mastermind and work with us, we build custom solutions for them. But the idea is really there are 9 essential things to making a sale. Do your clients know you, like you, and trust you? Is it easy? Does it work? And can they do it? Right? And is it proven? Right? So do you have your testimonials? Do you have a good process? And do you have a way to explain it so that you can repeat it over and over? And that's kind of what the Momentum Maker Mastermind is all about. Looking into under the hood, if you will, and finding out where can we tweak, enhance, add a supercharger, take something and double down on it that maybe a business owner didn't think about, but really has a huge impact on the outside, on the income.
I like that a lot. I use that same metaphor of looking under the hood. It's really important that we understand that you are in control and in charge of your own existing vehicle, but you know that it can be better. So somebody like you is going to pop the hood and they're going to say, oh, look, we can address all these 5-6 areas. We're going to rebuild this engine and make it just a beast of a machine so that you can continue your journey farther and faster and better, like you said, with all of that momentum. So if I wanted to take like a first step or I need to take that first mindset, you said, and change that, where do I go first?
Yeah, you know, mindset is really about how you think and feel about yourself and how you feel about the situations that you're in and the circumstances and the possibilities. So whenever we're talking about mindset, that's really the first step, getting someone to put themselves in the right frame for what's going on around them. I think mindset a lot of times gets knocked off the ledge, if you will, because people come in, they're like, I don't know what to do, or I'm not big enough for this environment, or I don't have the skills. And you know, we all have the skills and we all have special skills unique to us. And it's being able to lean on those, get centered in who we are, maybe take a deep breath, and then go forward with your authentic self. I think that's really the key in any room to elevating from I'm in the room to I'm running the room.
I like that. I like that saying a lot. First of all, I appreciate you talking about your authentic self as a part of your mindset. I've caught a lot of entrepreneurs, even well-established ones, still pretending to be what they think the industry or the client wants them to be. And they're truncated because there's always a false sense of self. So the authentic self is going to unlock a lot of potential. I like that you said that. And I think you're really spilling some wisdom out there already. So that's the first step. I really like the proper framing in your mindset. Where would I go next? So maybe I've got a good mindset. Maybe I'm properly framed and I am authentic. How do I take the next step forward?
Yeah, you know, I always, around mindset specifically, we want to talk about the steps, the procedures, processes, and tools, right? So we're talking about building your toolkit. What do we have? What do we need? And are you going to try and build your own toolkit, or do you want to use one that's going to save you the 20 to 40 year learning curve? Because there are plenty of people like you, like me, Ryan, that have been through the tough times, tripped over the rocks, hit our head, you know, had all the problems come up, and we had to find ways to solve that. So joining a mastermind or being part of the Momentum Maker Mastermind is a great way to leapfrog forward and get control, because you're bringing in these tools that other people have succeeded with, but maybe you haven't been exposed to yet. I'll give you one as an example: time blocking. I talk to a lot of younger people, especially, who are like, I can't get off the couch. I don't know where to start. I just want to go be with my friends. I can't, I'm afraid of failure, whatever it is. And when I look at them, they don't have time. They go, we don't have time for this. We can't figure out our time block. So I show them their calendar and we work it out, and we go, well, you're going to sleep for 8 hours and you're going to eat for 3 hours and you need 2 hours to exercise and all that. So let's just put it on the calendar in a block. And after the, and what they usually tell me at the end is, well, I have like 8 hours of free time every day after I do everything I need. And well, what are you going to do with those 8 hours? You're going to journal. You're going to go watch some motivational videos. You're going to watch the Momentum Maker Mastermind materials that are available to you on the websites and places that we hold those. Are you going to reach out and call a mentor? What are you going to do to solidify your mindset around where you're trying to go in those 8 hours that you didn't even realize you had free? Let's not watch TV and Instagram. Maybe we should work on ourselves a little bit.
I love that so much. May turn your free time into self-improvement time. And I think most people, once they start the self-improvement time, they kind of get hooked to it. You know, they kind of be like, wow, I can, you know, maybe the first 2 weeks isn't that impressive looking in the mirror because I increased my workouts, but week number 6 and number 8, where my abs are starting to show, starts to get pretty exciting. Hey, week number 8, where I just got the third large client, is starting to get pretty exciting because I learned sales tactics, or I learned a leadership. I learned how to have accountability and sell myself to my staff based on that. So now they have loyalty. So that time blocking is so essential. And then, is there a time, pun intended, when you need to deviate or shift your time blocking strategically or due to urgent things that come up?
Yeah, you know, I found in my business, being able to prioritize and find the big rock is probably the most important thing about time management. If you find the one big thing and you push that forward, everything else unlocks and results come much more quickly. I think a lot of people spend too much time cleaning their desk or worrying about the small thing or worrying about their social media. You know, I talk to a lot of people about marketing in particular. We need more social media. We need more funnels. You don't need any of that. You need to talk to the people that already know who you are that want to hear from you. So why don't we go talk to them? Well, I don't know. It's almost like people are scared. They're scared to get vulnerable and say their truth to the people that actually support them at the highest levels. And so they run away from those relationships, which creates a longer timeline for success. And it's breaking through that and breaking through that fear that really elevates people quickly. And when you focus on the big rock and who are the next three people you need to talk to make sure that rock gets where it needs to go, things start to get really focused and then results start to happen pretty quickly.
I like that a lot. And I'm going to really demonstrate some self-control because I give entire speeches on fear. Fear is something I love and hate very much. And the big rock mentality, I think, is so important. You know, Jocko Willink, super famous, says prioritize and execute, right? So you need to find the big rock and you need to resolve the situation with that big rock. And guess what? Well, now everything else is easy to pick up and easy to deal with because that anxiety, that burden, that giant task in front of you is gone. So I can definitely appreciate that. And I definitely understand too, pivoting for urgencies and emergencies, but we got to make sure that we prioritize something that we perceive as urgent may not truly be urgent to the mission, or something that a customer thinks is an emergency may not even be that high priority to us. So that's something pretty good. So one last question before we have to cut to break here. So step number three, I've got my time blocked. I'm making self-improvement. I'm getting my sales processes done. I understand my mindset and see my value now. So where do I go to really service those clients or take step three in moving forward?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. And just to touch on what you just said, urgent versus important. We do a whole training. We do a whole day on the difference between urgent and important and when do they align, right? And so once you understand, you know, there's only one company in the country, in the United States that I know that specializes in emergencies, and that's the fire department. Their job is to find an emergency and execute. The rest of us, not so much, unless we create false sense of emergency, yes, right? Absolutely. So where do we go? Once you understand you're urgent, you're important, and where your rock is, then it's about building a team around you and being able to distribute that work efficiently so that your client gets the best experience possible. At the end of the day, sales and execution is all about client satisfaction and the coordinated experience that they're going to have when they work with you.
Love it. Love it. That's a good spot for me to stick the pin. I love that. The phrase that I use is manufactured emergencies. And so I love that very much. But Kirk, sit tight. And everybody watching at home, sit tight. We're going to be back with more Kirk and more Pivotal Change right after this message. Thank you for sticking with us through the break. And we're back with more Kirk Jaffe here on Pivotal Change. And we've been having a really good conversation about what we've learned is all of these M's about being a momentum maker and mastermind and using things like your mindset, your methods, and your metrics to grow and really make a bigger impact to gain momentum with your industry. So Kirk, we had a great conversation about all of that. We talked about, you know, just being able to really understand the right frame of mind for yourself to grow, how to put in some systems. And now we're talking about going into the next steps, you know, about building a better customer or maybe a better experience for your customer. So we've said at the end of the last segment, it's all about making the best experience for your customer. So what is a good way to do that? Like, how much should I be doing for the customer, communicating with the customer, or trying to expand my offering to the customer?
Yeah, it's a great conversation and a slippery slope and a double-edged sword and hugely rewarding, right? So when I start thinking about customers, I really want to drill down on what is the best thing that we do offer them. And let's double down on making that experience the best. It's not about having multiple products. I work with a restaurant as one of my clients, and they came in, they said, we have to have a menu item that serves everyone's taste. I go, then why do you have a restaurant? Because you might as well just be a grocery store, right? If you want to be a restaurant, it should be your taste and how you express it, and you want other people to experience your flavors and your special sauce, if you will. So we do the same thing in business. Right. Some of the things you can do, you know, I write a lot of books. I've got three of them right here. You know, I've written books for years. Some of them are about, you know, how to increase sales and how to leverage your relationships. Others are about how to get yourself approved for a loan, which is more about a tactical experience that I gave my clients who wanted to not get their loan approved. Well, instead of saying it over and over and over, I wrote a book. And the book comes with all kinds of support materials in it, and there's QR codes and there's additional trainings. So every book becomes an experience. And that's a great way when you're talking to clients or you're trying to expand your, you know, go deeper on your relationship, I should say. You're going deep on your relationship. Let's find ways to make clients want to stay engaged with you and want to come back to you to make sure that they're getting a great experience and a great outcome. I think about Amazon as an example. Right, you go on Amazon, you buy something. Well, it started out as a bookstore, but now almost everyone goes to Amazon. Why do we go to Amazon? It's easy, it works, they guarantee their prices. If something's wrong, they take a return. It's just, it's so easy. It's so easy, it's better than going to the store. Yep. That's why Amazon is blowing up, right? And then they added products. Well, if you like your books and now you need your supplies for your house, we'll offer you TV shows and we'll offer you video entertainment. But it's the same concept. Log in, pick what you want, bam, it shows up, and there's no hassles. And I think the more that we can create that concept for our clients, the more they're going to engage with us, the more they're going to refer people to us, and the more we're going to grow our companies.
I like that a lot. And that, hearing you talk about that kind of really makes me look in the mirror about our journey here as a regular old tax factory converting to an advisory-based firm. And my partner, Wayne Shelton, he'll admit, and he actually tells a story in a very humorous way. He says, when I first started and launched my own, I'd do anything, right? I would do whatever the service was required. If you're going to pay my hourly rate, I'll wash your car in the parking lot, or I'll do your taxes, or I'll plan and do whatever, right? And because he just wanted to make a buck, he wanted to serve everybody and have as many customers as possible and build that base. But over time, he realized that was extremely painful to try to be all things to all people. And so now we offer two services, right? We offer two services and we excel at both of them. And it's obviously driven the needle up and to the right for us. So that's a really good point, and I appreciate you making me look in the mirror like that. So you're talking about increasing that experience. How much communication does it take for you to draw that out of your customer, keep in contact with your customer? And if we're going to try to build kind of an Amazon model with ourselves and our client base, how do we execute on that?
How often you communicate with your client is really more about the client than it is about us, right? We can be arrogant and think that we need to communicate all the time, but maybe the client doesn't want to hear it. I have to change my entire email system because I have so much spam in my email now from people that think that I want what they have to offer. Whether I ever bought something from them or I didn't buy something from them, I don't want to hear from them anymore. And so I declare email bankruptcy is what I do. I put an autoresponder. I said, declared email bankruptcy. If you want to reach me, call me. Don't email me. And so how often do you want to communicate with somebody? You want to communicate as often as it takes to get them to receive the value. Now, I don't communicate in one way. I communicate in four ways at all times. I always will send an email, make a phone call, and then send a text to all my clients all the time. If I send out an email on a mass campaign, it also goes with the text, hey, I sent you an email. And then I follow up with a call. Not sure if you got my email, my text, just wanted to make sure we got connected, right? And so it's about offering value, but to me, it's more about offering relationships. One of the things we're doing in the Momentum Maker Mastermind is we're opening up, I'm in development right now on an AI program so that it makes it easier to connect on a personal level with clients in a way that gets them to call you. And so that's what I want to be in. I want to be in conversation. It's not about how many different ways or how many times. I want to be in an ongoing conversation with everyone that I work with.
I like that. And I think what I'm pulling out, hopefully I'm not grasping too deep, is that when you communicate in the way you communicate, I think just sending somebody a spam email is lazy, is what I think, right? And I think just shooting a text message is pretty casual. And a call can be very personal but time consuming. And of course, sitting down for a meeting is kind of that ultimate face-to-face interaction. And we can do that through virtual like this. But what you're doing in that four-prong approach and what you're doing in the methodology that you do it in is really you're demonstrating care for your client. And now your client says, man, this guy genuinely cares about me. And you're developing an AI software that's going to pull your ability to care about them out automatically. So you can skip to the I care about you step and not have to do all of the learning, manual learning step. So I think one, that's pretty genius. And I think that's a pretty valuable point for us to learn is that you have to demonstrate that you care for your client, right? And Amazon, as your previous model says, hey, we'll take your refund. Hey, we'll fix the problem. Hey, we'll do whatever it is. We'll provide as much convenience as possible. Well, shoot, they care about my time. They care about what I'm doing in my life that they don't even know about by making it as easy as possible. So I really, really appreciate that a lot. That is quite the built experience. If your client is saying, hey, I sent you something, I sent you, I'm just checking in on you, making sure you got it, because I think you want the value that I'm offering. I'm just making sure you got it, nobody missed it. Nothing. I don't want to make sure you didn't fall through the cracks. Does that
Yeah,
sound
it does. That's right. It doesn't have to be obnoxious. It can be, like you said, it's in the spirit of caring. And a phone call doesn't have to be a time committed event. It can be just a voicemail message, and there are voicemail systems that just drop voicemail messages, so that it's just another way to be in front of a client, while you're building the bigger picture and always add value. If you're going to do anything, have a value add. You're going to send an email, have a link to some type of free training. You're going to write a book, have, 15 QR codes that go to 4.5 hours of trainings that are hosted on YouTube, so that people can really get to know you. I think after running 3,000 vendors, I've had over 3,000 vendors I had to manage in my career. What I realized is almost everybody has the same product. It's the personality that really creates successful businesses. You could have two items in your business, Ryan, and find one guy. I have two rules. I don't work with jerks, and everyone needs to make money. You have to be able to see how you're going to make money. You don't have to make it right away, but we have to understand there's a path to making money. And if someone, and I say I don't work with jerks, I mean it. If somebody ever abuses anyone on my staff, if they ever write something to me that just rubs me the wrong way and I can't reconcile it with them quickly and reasonably, I just go, we're not meant for each other. Life is too short. And you make more money when you work with people that you love being around and when they love being around you than you do trying to fit the circle into the square peg, right? Offering a service that maybe is out of alignment somewhere.
Yep. I can appreciate that so much. And that goes back to the caring side, because now your team, your employees, your staff, your peers know that you care. Somebody smarts off in an email and you go, whoa, we don't tolerate that. You don't get to talk to my employees at me about my employees like that. I always make a little wisecrack joke. I say, there's only one person allowed to yell at my employees, and that's me. Hey guys, have you ever heard me yell at you? Right? And they're like, never. I was like, exactly. Nobody yells at my employees, right? And so we've had to fire a couple of clients for things like that. And the morale in the office goes up like, whoa, our boss doesn't care about the bottom line. He cares about us. Well, guess what? The bottom line is going to go up when that happens. There's this ripple effect. So that's a huge thing that you just shared with us that I hope people register with. Protect your people, protect your culture, show that you care, not just outward to the clients, but to the people that you're going to be spending 8-10 hours a day with. That's important stuff. So give us one last piece of wisdom. Last question of the day before we have to close out this segment of the show, about getting that momentum, about being that mastermind. Give us a little paragraph here about go home and do this now today, and we can apply it today.
Yeah, momentum is a function of its energy, right? And activation energy and energy. And energy can be formed in a lot of different ways. Energy can be formed by completing a task, and then we feel good about it, and that gives us energy. Energy can be formed by physical work, like going to work out, and you go lift heavy weights, and then you can feel the energy. Energy can also be created by being around the right people. And that's what this mastermind is all about, being around other people that have good mindset, are open and curious to what's going on, to building new relationships, and that creates energy. Ryan, when I come on your show, we have energy, and I love being here and talking to you because it makes me feel good. And then I want to offer good stuff, and you see the smile on my face, and you see the tone of my voice is probably a little higher than maybe if I'm, talking to a doctor or something about my healthcare. It's probably a little lower in my case. So find ways to be in the right environment. What do they say? We're a product of the top five people we hang out with. So let's make sure we're hanging out in the right crowd. Let's make sure we're taking care of our energy, whatever that looks like. And that's when you're going to start seeing the momentum sustain, because momentum doesn't sustain. Momentum starts and stops. You have to serve the momentum too and hold it and take care of it and keep feeding it by being in a positive state. And that's what these masterminds are all about.
Love that so much. And you got my physics brain going. I was a physics and calculus double major before I swapped lives. So momentum always has forces acting on it. One of those laws is an object in motion wants to stay in motion. But the reality is we live on Earth, and there's always gravity, and there's always friction, and there's always wind resistance. There's always forces acting on your momentum. So you have to continue to put energy in the system to keep the momentum going. So I want to tell everybody to go out there and get the workout in. Finish that project that's sitting on your desk. Go thank the person next to you for a job well done and inject that energy into the system. I love it. So, Kirk, you've got this thing coming up here, man. Here's the time to free advertise for all the wisdom you just dropped on us. How do we get a hold of you? How do people find you if they want to work with you, my man?
Yeah, you can always call me. You can scan the QR code there that's behind me on the screen. And that'll take you straight to the Momentum Maker Mastermind headlines. You can get in there. You can go to kirkjaffe.com. You can go to kirkjaffeconsults.com. Send me an email. Send me a voice message. Call me. 818-469-2189 is the number. Or Kirk at kirkjaffe.com. Send me an email. You can find me. If you type in Google Kirk Jaffe, you're going to find the first four pages on Google are all Kirk Jaffe. So just reach out, get yourself registered. It's a free event. We run it for a year. So anyone that joins, we run it for a year. But the goal again is to double what your investment is. So if you join the mastermind and we don't double your income in a year or double the amount you spent on the mastermind, we're going to give you your money back. So it's really, no risk whatsoever. It's just about being around the right people, doing the right stuff. So sign up.
Kirk, you're like gold, my man. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
You got it, Ryan. Appreciate you.
And everybody else, we're cutting halfway on the show. So we've got, still got two more segments to go on Pivotal Change. Sit tight. We'll be right back for more. Welcome back. You have reached the halfway point on tonight's episode, and we had some really great discussions with Kirk. We had a lot of great insights, a lot of really practical things that we can use, and I hope you look him up, you reference his material, and use him if you need him. And we're going to transition now to a very good friend of mine. I served with this man for 12 years in law enforcement, and he has some incredible credentials. He has accomplished some incredible things in leadership, largely inside of the governmental agency, but also in his private life. I would like to welcome Assistant Chief Anthony Copeland of the Paducah Police Department. He is a law enforcement executive at some of the highest levels, and we're going to be picking his brain tonight about how to really drive your leadership forward. Anthony, thanks for coming on, man.
Ryan, thanks for having me.
Well, I can assure you the pleasure is all mine, and I'm really excited. I may have never told you this before, but the audience knows that they are supposed to be watching with a pen and paper. So we want to drive those highlights into their brains so they write it down and they use it in their life to make that pivotal change. So I like to jump right in because we're always up against a time window. And I want to ask you that we've been having conversations about morale, boosting morale, and there's a statement that you made to me called morale at all junctions. So I'd like you to just elaborate on that. What do you mean when you say morale at all junctions?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think so often we look at morale as like a stepping process, right? When we're evaluating our businesses or the entities that we're responsible for, we're trying to measure it and we're trying to look at things and say, what's the next big thing I can do? What's the next program that I can put in place? And we overcomplicate what is actually a very simple process is that morale comes down to every single interaction. And morale is built into every part of your business. Everything, the way you train, the way you lead, the way you interact. And it always has to be in the back of your mind that every single time you're even having a conversation, it's gotta be purposeful. You know, it's every single junction, every single, that moment of connection, you're doing one of two things. You're either increasing and impacting your morale in a positive way, or you're detracting. As leaders, we don't get to have mundane days. We don't get to just have mundane interactions. One or two things, you're taking it up or taking it down.
I really like that. I'm going to kind of work backwards in what you just said, because I think it's really important for that to echo is that when you interact with your peers, your subordinates, really even superiors who are in that position, that you're either boosting morale or taking away, like you said, detracting from that morale. There's no net zero. There's no neutral when it comes to morale. They're walking away feeling a little better or feeling a little rougher. So that's really important. And you said being purposeful and intentional were two words that you brought up. As a leader, this has to be on the forefront of your mind, and it has to be more than just a checkbox. I did my morale activity today, but you have to live it and breathe it and do it in every interaction. That was a heavy emphasis. Is that correct?
Correct. Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So springboarding off kind of being intentional with your morale interactions, and you said at all junctions, which means it's going to go all throughout the business or the structure of the organization. As a leader, if I want to be intentional, what's a good way for me to like build and maintain morale, knowing that it's going to be bred at every level of business? Like it might be just, hey, here's a routine operation. I know there's roll calls in a police department. That's a very routine activity. So how do I do it again? Live it in every interaction and not just make it some part of a major win or a major pitfall where we have to address morale.
Well, so in leadership, we have to mechanize, all right? So we have an expectation here that it's not just me, right? It's not just about how I conduct myself, because if I'm the only person in the organization being intentional and purposeful, then it doesn't go beyond my next interaction or my last interaction, and that'll quickly dissipate if my leadership is not stepping to that expectation. So I have this theory of you have to mechanize, you have to build in ways that you're ha that there's an understanding of that expectation. And we do that, there's a combination of you take concepts and you attach concepts in this conceptual idea to a technical process. For instance would be, what do our people, they really care about, obviously the culture that they're in, but they want to make sure they have their time off, right? They want stability in their life. They want to know that their paychecks are coming in. So we have a chance to mechanize down through the ranks of our leadership the ability to address consistently and intentionally address those issues. And it comes down to that, even down to the basic training of a new supervisor, making sure that when the simplicity of I'm asking for a day off. Okay, when that person asks for the day off, did you make it important? Did they see, when did you turn around in your chair? Did you look at them? Did you listen? Did you talk through it? Did you hold your end of the deal up, and did you respond quickly to that request? Like that right there, you can talk the talk in executive leadership, you can, and all day long about being intentional. But if you have a that line load supervisor that blows somebody off at a critical point in their life, and you didn't train them to that point, train them that expectation, it's great that you had this wonderful idea, but it's failing on the front line, and they will lose that. They'll even start wondering. You'll have this breakdown of perspective or focus where they're seeing you walking around and acting and talking a certain way, but then at the line level, they're
Right.
not following through. And it makes you as a leader look like a fraud if you're not intentional at every junction.
So looking like a fraud is a common fear of leaders in general. Everybody has that imposter syndrome where like, hey, I seem to be making it. I've climbed so high, but am I really the person I think I am? And then being intentional, you're talking about layers. Like you have to watch down the layers. You have to be purposeful in observing the people underneath you and how they deliver that. And I really like your interaction because as a supervisor, I've sat in that chair. And as a supervisor, I've had 14 people under my command all asking for certain days off. For me, that's just routine. Okay, what day do you want? What day you want? But for them, that's a life-changing event. I'm the best man in my college roommate's wedding. And if you can't approve this in a timely manner, I'm holding up the entire wedding party and making their decisions. And we don't realize the morale impact that that has. And then we might go wave our pom-poms in some team-building exercise when we're not living out in the daily
Correct.
details.
Correct.
Yeah, I like that emphasis a lot. That purposefulness and observing it up and down in layers is huge. So you kind of talked about how to implement that in a little bit. Are there any kind of processes or rituals that you're writing down, paying attention to, or really incorporating in your life so that this doesn't become hollow in your efforts?
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah, it really comes down to like this, you've got to believe this. Because if you don't believe this and you believe it in yourself and you exemplify it, through your actions, again, it will be seen through. So I'm setting out every day looking for opportunities to be intentional. Something simple, let's switch to family life. So
Okay.
here you are, this exceptional leader at work, but when you get home, are you taking a moment to lead your family by listening? Being, the simplicity of putting the cell phone down, looking them directly in the eyes, knowing what is important to your spouse and evaluating that. And there's so many parallels here with good leadership and being a good husband, right? Where am I being intentional at every junction? Am I bringing the atmosphere of my own household up because I'm not overlooking that moment where they just needed me to listen, where they wanted me to fix it or listen? And so if you can take care of that into your personal life and that becomes who you are, then when you go to work, you're not thinking through it. You're leading just naturally through action, and that gives you that basis, right? So now we are mechanizing this thought, mechanizing this concept down to my training, my line level supervisor, my leadership training of breaking down every technical aspect, but attaching the why and attaching the concept to that technical action, so that it's not about just checking the box. It's you're doing this and you're doing it because of all these different reasons. And this is how this reason impacts morale and pushes the culture up.
Yep, I think you're hitting some incredible points home. You know, I try to impart to some of my leaders that like you could have somebody that's like a knight in shining armor, golden child at the office, but they've got all kinds of family problems and stuff at home, and they literally take off their mantle of leadership when they walk through their door at home, and they check out, right? And they're like flipping a switch. And you need to be the same person in all areas, all realms of your life, you know. And this goes back, this is a whole different tangent conversation, but when developing a leadership philosophy, you're not building a leadership philosophy for the police department or your church or your softball team. You're building a leadership philosophy for life, and then it just pours itself out in whatever area you're looking at the time. And I like the check the boxes thing because so many people just want to get analytical with it. And what's the next thing I need to do? What's the next thing I need to do? What's the next thing I need to do? Maybe that's a good place to start when somebody has no exposure to leadership, just to get a rhythm going. But in order, like you were saying, to not make it hollow, to make it care and purposeful, you've got to care about it yourself, and you've got to give the attention and the time. So those are great points. Let me ask one more question before we cut to commercial break, and we'll pick up right after that. But can you just really expand on why it is so critical to not overlook the small acknowledgments, the small daily interactions, and not just focus on the bigger, grandiose things, that the details in daily leadership?
So you have thousands of these small interactions, right, throughout a day. You may only have one or two major critical incidents or critical issues that people get to see. Oh, wow, what a great leader. Those things will come, but those will also be forgotten. What is not forgotten was, did you acknowledge them when they walked in the room? Did you respond to them in a timely manner? A lot of times we get so busy. We get so busy in our days. We're putting out so many fires that we forget that that email that they sent us was really important to them. They took time to bang that email out and type it out to us, and we don't respond to it till the next day. What did we just say about how important they are to us? So it's all
Right.
those small little things. Just throughout your day, you're constantly evaluating, like, how important is this person who sent it? Did they take the time? And am I showing them back? Am I pushing it back to them that I find value in what they're doing? And all this to me is the secret sauce of great leadership, that when it's there, people don't really realize why it's so great. They just know things are going really well and they enjoy coming to work. But when it's not there, everybody knows. Just like
Yes.
KFC is that with their secret recipe, you know when it's not there.
I love it. Well, let me add a comment to that. I think a little part of what you're talking about as well is like just going around the office saying, "Hey man, good work." Oh, hey, I like that. A pat on the shoulder, a high five, or just a comment that seems very organic and in passing, really it anchors itself to that person a little bit more, and it also brings out that more optimistic, positive version of who you are. So let
Yes.
me go ahead and stick a pin in the conversation right here. We're going to be coming back right after this break with more Anthony Copeland and really some really solid wisdom on more leadership and the insights that are involved. So stick with us through this break. We'll be back with more Pivotal Change right after this. We are back for the final push of the night, and we have my good friend Anthony Copeland here giving us incredible wisdom on leadership and how to build organic mechanisms and make it a part of your daily routine and be very purposeful with your leadership and understand that the little things matter. And right before we jump to break, you had made a statement about knowing when times are good. People don't really know why times are good, but the leadership is leading during good times. But when times are bad, everybody recognizes it. And along those lines of purposeful leadership, tell me about what would a good leader do when times are good? Are they just going to float and go with the flow, or are they going to do certain things during good times?
Well, it's a constant point of evaluation. I think a dangerous place is when you get to the point where things are running well, things are smooth, and everybody's just is happy. To me, those are much more dangerous than when things are great, when things are not great. And like you said, everybody knows. Maintaining this constant evaluation, It's you're, you should be constantly doing litmus tests yourself and asking yourself, why is that? Why did it work well? Again, if your strategy as a leader, like your leadership, you should be moving forward and moving things forward in a way that everybody feels like they're doing it themselves. Like that's your high point, right? Of when they're acting, they're doing, they feel ownership, they feel as if they're doing it, but they're steering the ship. You're at the rudder at the back of the ship, and it's going the direction that you set. And constantly asking that question of why is this working, and breaking that down and taking notes, because guess what? What got you there isn't going to get you there. And if you think that you're just going to continue to move down that line, you're setting yourself up for failure. There's a continuum here of where you're constantly evaluating, do we need to adjust? Do we need to adjust? Do we need to change? Because if you wait till the symptom is morale is sinking or the culture is changing, you're on a destructive path and you may have already lost a lot of buy-in, and a lot of that direction of a momentum that you could have kept by simply constantly asking and evaluating yourself of where are we at, and listening to people, asking people, what's my blind side? What's our blind side here? To maintain that focus and direction.
I think you just hit kind of a key phrase I use is, are you constantly evaluating your blind spots?
Yes.
And there's a form of healthy paranoia that a leader needs to have, is that even in the good times, and be looking around saying, hey, what's going to sink this ship? And I think your evaluation of that, the way you explained it, was very articulate, and I appreciate that. So now I'm aware of you had a great opportunity as a leader that you did a very good job with, me knowing some of the behind the curtain stuff that goes on with it, that you went through and you had a challenging leadership endeavor ahead of you with the 911 call center, the dispatch center that's here locally. And you made a comment in dealing with that about having something that was new to you, because again, as a police commander, you're dealing with civilians at a 911 call center, and it's really a different world. So it was new to you. And then them having a police executive come over and change the style of operations from a civilian director, that was new to you and new to them, is the statement that you said. So I was hoping you could expand on that situation as much as you're comfortable with, and the processes and the procedures you went through to have that transition take place.
So when I stepped into leadership, and it was an interesting period where there was no actual manager over the 911 center. There's a one single shift supervisor. There should have been a manager, an assistant manager, four shift supervisors. Staffing was essentially at 50%. Critical roles were missing. There was no technical IT support. Majority of the things within a 911 center, right, they require some sort of technical support. So we had, even in my first week there, we lost three more employees before I even had a chance to show up the first day. Things needed my attention. But the wonderful situation I found myself in was that I didn't know anything. I had no technical understanding of anything in the 911 center. And at the same time, I was also fighting the fact that the folks in the 911 center, the people that I was in charge of leading, they didn't know me. They knew more than me about what their jobs entailed and about the center, and they knew the history. And I was coming from a place of, you could say, a place of weakness. But I sat back and evaluated, okay, how do I go about this? And essentially, what I adopted was embrace humility. Embrace humility and identify expertise and identify the passion of the people around you, and just and be willing to listen and learn. And I realized that humility translates. It translates. There was concerns that I'd come in there because they were new of my leadership on the and within the police department, and I have high expectations. I have, we will have ideas, we have programs, and we run hard and fast with them. But guess what? What like I said before, earlier, what got me there is not going to get me there from that point, and I had to take a step back and really start at the basic understanding, this idea of we got to rebuild this plane, and we're going to fly it at the same time because we have to
Agreed.
maintain 24-hour emergency services with 50% of the staffing that we should have to do it. So that was the challenge, the opportunity that I was given.
Most people go through a little, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy, but you hit the nail on the head. Is you are of the mindset of like, here's a challenge. No, here's an opportunity. Good. I'm going to learn so much more. Good. I'm going to expand my relationships, my skill, and my mindset. And you said something, I wrote it down right here, just like a good student of my own show. And it says, embrace humility and identify your experts or expertise.
Right.
And so you had to sit back and say, I don't know what I don't know, and I need to learn from the people that have the repetition, the experience, the years, and the reps under their belt, and sit back and learn that. And in your humility, you probably explain that to them as well, that, hey guys, I'm going to be learning from you. You're going to have to teach me the job so that I can best lead you in this job. And I know that overall went pretty well, but that's a pretty disastrous situation for a leader to just have themselves thrown into and say, just like you said, I need to rebuild this plane while it's still in the air, because you can't
Sure.
shut down 911, right?
Yes, correct.
So let me ask you this. In doing that, there had to be a substantial effort put into establishing trust in the beginning,
Yes.
because there's going to be a ton of, who's this guy? What's he going to come in here? He's going to rip the guts out of this place, and now everything's going to change, and a scary time for them. What did you do to go and being effective in establishing trust and guiding them to that new direction?
Well, again, the first one within humility is asking questions, and showing that I'm not just saying that I don't know, like I want to know. And when you start showing that interest in who they are as a person, as well as how things work, and while you're working through that, you've got to quickly get your feet underneath you to establish a vision, right? And that vision, because if you sit and focus on the chaos of the day, if you focus on this crisis, everyone else is going to maintain crisis mode, and you've got to quickly establish this vision of where are we going to go, and then start. You have to have quick, small wins. You got to figure out, hey, how do I fix? Hey, you tell me all your problems. Hours and hours of just sitting in a room listening, not listening, asking questions, and listen more, because if you're in that, if you inundate yourself with their environment, you're going to start seeing and hearing the problems before you even ask them. And then when they see that, coupled with action, got to be coupled with intentional action and clear communication, then trust comes along. You go from the new guy who nobody knows about, that they're concerned, is he going to flip everything upside down, to, hey, he actually cares about this place. Hey, he's here at 1 o'clock in the morning because he wants to know how things run at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And that's how you start building that buy-in and building that trust. But you got to parallel that with the vision of where we're going to go. Because if you take too much time and you're sitting there while things are in crisis, you're going to stall in crisis. It's going to take longer to dig out of it. You got to show that we're climbing out of crisis.
Yeah, I love it. So one thing that you hit several times is vision is a huge keyword buzzword for me and a lot of people in the industry. But what you did is the phrase that I use is called vision alignment. And you have to constantly come back to whatever actions, whatever decisions, whatever personnel you're building, it has to be all drawn back to vision alignment. We're all on that vision. We can't get stuck in a rut and detoured on this one problem or issue that's in front of us. And I appreciate you drawing that out. And I think it's so important for people to say that you need to emphasize the quick and or easy wins to immediately get some traction and motion going. And I think that's something that people say, or maybe, tongue in cheek, they know they're supposed to do it, but then again, they're not purposeful and say, what are the first two or three quick wins I can get so we can at least get our first high fives out of the way, right? And then build trust and establish from there. So probably last question for the evening on this one. And I want you to speak directly to our audience, who is largely in the entrepreneurial realm, or at least executives and leaders of companies, and say, hey, you're first taking charge of a team. You are just now coming in the situation. They find themselves in a similar circumstance to you. They have a great challenge slash opportunity ahead of them. What are you going to tell them are the first one or two moves they need to make when they get in there? And I know it's going to parallel some of what you said, but let them write down those two bullet points in their notes and say, go do this now.
Yeah, I think that the first one is don't assume that you understand. And I know that may sound a little silly, but if you assume that you understand, and if you walk in with here's my vision, and you don't have a full understanding of what's going on, you're gonna go one direction, and the entity's gonna go the other direction. And be a high communicator. I mean, there's just you've got to be there. You've got to be there. You have the time. Again, it's just like humility. It's just like respect. Those transcend. Time with your people is also transcendent. When they see that you're putting more time than anybody else, when you go to ask those hard things, when you start to move through hard decisions, they can't argue with the fact that you've shown that you care, that you're there, that you're bought in, and that you are working harder than the rest of the agency. There's early wins there.
I love it. The two great points for us to hold on to. Anthony, thank you so much for coming on the show. We're going to have you back in the future. We may even come up with a series for you in the future, but thank you so much for coming on Pivotal Change.
Welcome, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
To everyone else out there, I want to leave you with this final note. You go out into the world, I want you to see the change and be the change. And we'll catch you right here next time on Pivotal Change.